Mark is the first to tell how the people of Jerusalem waved palms. And most years at First Baptist Greensboro, we do the same. We order these palm branches. And they come 24 by 36 inches long in these packs of 100 that you can get for $17.99. But in ancient Jerusalem, they went out and they cut them from the fields, the Gospel of Mark describes. Or they cut leafy branches from the trees all around, as Matthew tells it. Or they took palms, the Gospel of John narrates, and they went out to meet Jesus. They used these palms as symbols of goodness and triumph and joy. These were the same palms that would adorn royal buildings and be etched onto the backs of coins. But they used palms for at least one more reason. As one scholar describes it, date palms grew abundantly in the ancient world, especially in Jericho, along the banks of the Jordan, and in Jerusalem. They used palms because they had them. They were right there within reach. They didn't have to go somewhere else to find them. They didn't have to order them. As Jesus came, the people greeted him with what they already had. The palms from the trees and the cloaks from their backs, their hands to wave, their voices to sing out for the one that was coming to save them. And we are so very aware in this moment of what we don't have. We don't have so many things that are familiar and comforting. We don't have much of what we've come to trust and rely on and pattern our lives after. We don't have the social proximity to people that we love. We don't have the physical help that we're used to offering one another. We don't have the same schedules. We don't have the same access to the passions that inspire us. We don't have the same access to church. We don't have the palms in our hands this morning. We don't have the comforts of church community. We don't have the music that stirs us corporately when we gather. We don't have the passing of peace in the pew. We don't have that person who calls our name and reminds us that we are known. And this is so much more than the worn truth that these good things in life are not to be taken for granted. That's true, but there is the far deeper encroaching awareness that we don't have the assurance that all will work out and be exactly like it once was. Some in our community face the reality that we don't have our livelihoods or our income streams or even our jobs. We don't have as much safety as we want for ourselves or for all people, and we don't have uniform confidence in our institutions to provide it and to guide us through. And then there's that nearing awareness that we don't have health, not unless everyone does. And so much of our response can become an effort to try to make up for what we don't have, to try to approximate it, to orchestrate it, to recreate it in some way. But maybe we can also remember that God has never seemed all that interested in what we don't have. Rather than asking us to make up for what's lacking or to elevate beyond the status of our lives, God comes to us. Jesus doesn't expect us to achieve some equality with God, and so Jesus gives that up himself, takes human form in the passage that Jim and Charty read for us. And then in his life and his ministry, he tells us that the kingdom of God is near to us even now, that we don't have to go somewhere else, that we don't have to do something else, that we don't have to have anything else. No, it says a friend and mentor of mine always liked to say that in describing the kingdom of God, Jesus never asks people to leave their world. And so he tells about this kingdom that comes near to people as they are sowing seeds in their own fields, as they're baking bread, the most mundane of tasks in their own kitchens. As they're tending their own flocks, as they're sweeping their own floors, it's coming near in relationships between fathers and sons, coming near in all the complexity of family, coming near, you see, in the things that we already have, not in the things that we don't have. In our current state of things, in this temporary normal, part of that for me is the reality of recording sermons and worship videos in my home, or specifically in the farthest corner of my home as I'm tucked in a bedroom right now. Our church has elected to worship through these pre-recorded videos, and so all of us worship leaders send them in, and then our communications director, Elisa Windsor, works some magic behind the scenes, but it all depends on these clean recorded videos. And I have found that one of the things that I don't have this moment in my life is silence. And that's related to another thing that I don't have much of, and that is privacy. Some of you understand that. And then connected to that is something else I don't have, and that is that perfect recording window when light and quiet and family schedule and kids' expectations all coincide just right. And even when I find that moment, then there's the bark of our dog or the scream of a child at their sibling. And even when that's been removed, like this week when Jenny so graciously took the kids and the dog to the park for a period so that I could record a worship video, I was heading down the stairs, and right as I got to the bottom, I hear a neighbor fire up his lawnmower. And so all that to say, I am recording a post-bedtime quiet corner of the house sermon right now. I was venting some of this to some clergy friends this week, and I said, I'm not sure that any of my sermons or worship clips so far are free from the scream of a child. And that might be true. You can go back and check yourself. But to that, my dear friend and fellow pastor, Reverend Courtney Allen, replied, well, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be free of all of that background noise and complication and challenge, because your life isn't. No one's life is. And this is life, with all of its background noise and foreground challenges and worry and grief. This is what we have. And we can become so preoccupied with what we don't have that we forget that that's not useful, meaning we cannot use what we don't have. And after all, God is about baking bread and sowing seed and sweeping the house and family relationships and all of the everyday, mundane, common things through which the kingdom is revealed by the one who was found in human form, who was born in human likeness. And so this is a time to remember what we have. And not simply in some fragile count your blessings fashion that dismisses all that is hard and can change with the movements of our days abruptly, but instead to know that what we have is all that God needs us to have in order to come to us, and that grace is always right within our reach. The theologian and Emory University professor, Dr. Gregory Ellison, tells the story of when he was a young boy and he was sitting on his grandmother's porch and he asked his Aunt Dottie, Aunt Dottie, do you know what I can do to change the world? And his Aunt Dottie said, well, I don't know much about how to change the world, but I can change the 3 feet around me. And this led Dr. Ellison in his life and ministry to issue what he calls the 3-foot challenge. And that is the question of what is within 3 feet of you? Who is within 3 feet of you that needs to know that they are made in the image of God, that needs to feel God's love for them? What is within 3 feet of you that you can use to make known this love of God, to celebrate the presence of Christ drawing near? Our children did that for us earlier in this service, and they didn't do it with 17-cent palms, but with magnolia branches from the backyard, or with azaleas cut from the bush out front, or with a spirit pom-pom that was pulled off a shelf in a bedroom. And we, all of us, have done that with communion today, and we've not done it with the brass trays and the choreography and the drama with all of us gathered together in the sanctuary, but instead with the bread from our own pantries and with the wine from the open bottle on the counter, with the most basic elements of flour, water, oil, salt, all of this, you see, using what we have. Father Sam Wells has said that this use of what we have is core to our faith. Wells is the vicar of St. Martin in the Fields in London. He's the former dean of Duke University Chapel, and he has written a book where he compares faith to improvisation, which at its heart is about using what is available. Because life, for people of faith and otherwise, is not scripted. It does not operate that way. And so Wells says, people of faith have always been those able to see the abundant things that God can do with limited materials. Materials like magnolia branches and sandwich bread and every human relationship and every reserve of strength and every already opened up remainder of joy and celebration and even any leftover bit of faith. Through the Spirit, God can use it abundantly, exceedingly more than we could ever imagine. God can improvise, and so the people of God can do the same. And so improvisation is a metaphor that might help us in this moment. Some of you know that theatrical improvisation begins with that most important of policies, that is, that you always say yes and. If you find yourself in a scene and your partner states something or introduces something, you can never say no, but. You can never protest. You can never try to change the course. No, instead you say yes to receive. Then you say and to expand. Yes, and signaling your acceptance, your trust, your commitment to move forward. And I confess, this is hard for me. Improv always has been. I'm not sure I've ever been so nervous as when I was in some sort of improv exercise at my arts high school years ago. I never liked improv because there's so much unknown. I like life scripted. Trust is hard, and even then I knew that improvisation can go oh so badly, which of course is true. It can go badly. We can actually misuse what we have. We can actually abuse what we have. And within a 3-foot reach of all of us today, there are so many things that we have the capacity to destroy, to hurt, to harm, to fracture. And so it was in Jerusalem. As the week goes on, as we follow along with Jesus, we see how within reach was power, was betrayal, was denial, was corruption, was collusion. Within reach, there were so many chances to abuse trust, to misuse friendship, to fracture relationships. Within reach, there was even a cross. And that leaves us with the most important of Palm Sunday questions. What will we do with what we have? They rushed out to the fields to cut branches. They ran out to the trees around them to pull down what they had. And this has always been the story when Christ is drawing near. And the God of all of those people cutting palm branches, the God of all of those people pulling off and laying down their cloaks, those people fetching donkeys and singing songs and waving their arms, well, that God is the God of searching shepherds and waiting fathers, and treasure hidden in our own fields, probably within 3-foot reach. This is the God of 5 smooth stones and just as many loaves to go with 2 fishes. This is the God of common ordinary staves used to part waters and freedom fighters that stutter to get the words out. This is the God of reluctant prophets, the God of a willing young woman who carried God's Son. And this is the God who walked the streets of Nazareth and finally made way to Jerusalem to say to those who would listen, don't forget that you have me. And so surely This is the God of we sheltered people in place where we are sequestered off, staying at home, stir crazy, and experiencing this season as we never quite expected. People frustrated, people anxious, people lonely, and people afraid. And yet people to whom even now Christ draws near, calling us to do nothing more than to use what we have. And may it be so through Jesus Christ.